this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining.
Lone Wolf, Big Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamao. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 26. Nasdaq futures up 69. We were up a little more earlier as China somehow has signaled a willingness to maybe talk on tariffs. We don't know if those guys front ran that or whatever. Market's getting a little crazy. And we're not sure who's doing what where in the market. But anyway, we've been up for a while, and seems like we have turned the spigot to the upside here. And there's a buyer under the market, where for a while we had a seller above the market. And I'm going to say a lot of it has to do with the Fed back on the put money into the system routine. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
Living the dream every single day of my life.
Well, you know, that's the idea, isn't it? I mean, You're up. You're taking, as I used to say at Pullman, you're upright and taking nourishment and doing some good every day. What could be better?
What could be better? That's a good point.
I'm not so sure we'll figure out exactly why we're all here ever, or maybe someday we will. I don't know. But while we're here, we might as well do something, eh?
Well, yeah, it is kind of, you know. Hey, look, I have a job where I get to do good for a lot of people, so I rather like it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and. You always sort of did that, but I think you like this better than you've ever liked anything you did.
Probably. That could be true. Now, you know, whether I should have been doing it all along is another issue. Whether I even could have been doing it all along is another issue. So, you know, but, yeah.
But you had to do the other stuff to get the $40 million in the bank, so you don't have to worry about it.
That's right. There you go.
God.
40, huh?
All right, I'm sorry, 50. I didn't want to undershoot either.
Yeah, damn it, don't undersell.
Yeah, but I'm not going to, you know, Soros' buddy, I'm not going to say you only got $10 billion when you got 12 and insult your ass. Why would I do that?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally Soros' buddy. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, along that thing, I listened yesterday to both the Canadian, you know, this isn't really the news, it's kind of a lead-in, well, the Canadian guy who won and the Canadian guy who lost, well, they don't like it as much anymore. But I guess what I'm just saying is we're reaching a stage here, whatever side you're on, it seems to me it would be very, very difficult for a Republican to vote against, well, they're not doing much legislation. I mean, that's what Wayne was saying yesterday, and Andrew. But if they were, and the stuff they do.
Who are they?
I'm saying if Congress did something, it would be very difficult for anybody on the right to go, you know, to vote no against something Trump puts through or the Republicans put through. And it's equally difficult for a Democrat to sway and say, you know, this isn't a bad idea, even though it happens to be a Republican idea. So I thought yesterday, I'm driving home, I'm thinking, I'm going to engage Kevin on an esoteric argument regarding... How do we as voters, whatever side you're on or whatever it is, it really doesn't matter, how do we as voters have any friggin' idea if the people we are electing are any good, or if they ever had an independent thought in their life, if they're capable of having one, or they're just going to vote whatever the side votes, and how do we know if they're ever doing a good job or doing anything? I mean, part of this came up when I saw the... The 10 people on the list, 5 Republican, 5 Democrat, look to me like they're full-time traders. And the one guy, he's a Democrat. You know, what, 160 million shares he traded last year? And how many trades?
Yeah, that was Ro Khanna.
Yeah, but then a couple guys after him weren't that much different. There's still a couple trades a day, which, by the way, is fairly full-time. You know, and it looks like they're swinging some serious cash around. We're not doing one and two lots or having somebody do it. You know, it's one thing if it's their account and they hired me to do it. Okay, but doesn't appear that's the case, but I guess it could be. I don't know how, whether they got the statistics. But I guess I'm saying, Kevin, how do you have any idea if anybody's any good? I mean, I'll give you an example. My stepfather was when he got older, he couldn't really, well, he was in bad shape.
Well, he makes a lot of money on his trades, you know, he's good at that.
Well, yeah. But I said, you know, when Walt was older, he'd been in a couple of nursing homes. They all really sucked, I thought. And Dan got him in the veterans home, the state veterans home in Manteno. And that place was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And it was like a 6-month waiting list. And when he got in there, I go down to visit him. Like, you know, we went to visit him 3 days a week. Dan went 2 nights because he lived south, and I went on Saturday. And the people down there told me that most people just dropped the old man off and never saw him again. That was it. And I'm sitting there going, how the hell can any family do that? But evidently people do. And so when I get down there, and I take him, we go down to the cantina, because they had a little bank there, they had a cantina, they had everything going on. And the trips, if you could go, no, he wasn't capable of going anywhere, but the rooms were half empty. So I say to everybody, how come it's a 6-month wait to get in here and it's half full? Well, we don't have the budget. We have to have a certain amount of staff for people, and we don't have any more staff, so these are the amount of rooms that we can have occupied. And I'm thinking, well, that really sucks. Well, somewhere along the line, Tammy Duckworth, who I, you know, certainly respect as somebody who's got lost her legs and seems like a bright lady, seems like somebody you wouldn't mind having a beer with, she gets the job of the head of the veterans homes, the Veterans Affairs in Illinois. Which I don't really get, Kevin, the difference between the federal piece and the state piece, but the state does some. Yeah, these homes are state, and yet the veterans hospitals are federal. I don't know where the lines of delineation are, you know, and because when a couple times he had to go in the hospital, they put him in Kankakee. They didn't bring him up here to the veterans hospital. So I don't know how that works either. But what I'm saying is, I was reasonably close to that situation. I don't know if she did squat when she was in there. It didn't seem to me like all of a sudden the place got more full. I don't know. Maybe she. I don't know if they got any new equipment. Like I said, the people there were fantastic. I don't know if she did a good job or bad job. And it was one I was close to. Was it just a stepping stone for her, and she just sat there and did it for 2 years, and then ran for Senate? I mean, I have no idea. And yet, how the hell could if you just elect somebody and they're in Congress, Dem or Republican? And there's 50 votes, and they voted straight their side both times. How do they know if they have a brain cell working? If they're on a committee, if they ever have an idea, if they ever write a paper and say this is a new way of doing something, how do we have any idea if these people are any good?
Well, I guess the only way you know is if they manage to get news coverage or get in front of a camera or do, you know, sit down and do an interview that's more than a 2-minute soundbite. Which I actually, in podcast world nowadays, you are starting to see a lot more of that from, but not universally, not even close to universally, but at least you're at the point where you're starting to see people sit down and get pinned down on things. So you might find that, but I think you also have to go with results. So when you, if we take Veterans Affairs as an example, you know, what's the wait time to get an appointment? What kinds of treatments do they get? Have there been scandals at VA hospitals that have gone unaddressed? And I think the answer to all of that is yes. So I would look at everybody on that committee and say, if you aren't out in the public screaming to the hills that about what should be done and what has to be done and who won't help you get that done, then then I just assume guilty for everybody on the committees.
Well, I mean, I go back to...
And I'm sorry, you know, I would feel the same way about a company that that is totally underperforming. It's got all kinds of, bad news going on, and you don't sit there and look at one, one person. You look at, let's say, we don't sit there and look at the IT person and say, well, that person's really good. Look, you've been there 10 years. How good could you be? If nothing else, you should have left a long time ago, because you don't want to be associated with something like that. So, you know, I think you look at individuals. If you want to look at Congress, look at the committees where they serve and how effective are the committees.
Well, I mean, I guess then it comes down to the chairman and whether or not you're allowed to do something.
But if you're not, then why doesn't everybody know that?
Well, I guess but who's everybody?
Part of the
problem
is they all try not to out each other. Now that's changed a lot on a partisan basis, but it hasn't changed internally. And they just refuse to hold each other accountable for this, and that's a big problem.
Well, I mean, I guess on a personal level. I mean, I got to go back to, I'll push back on you a little bit, because you know who would disagree with you on that is your old buddy Mike Royko. And they said, well, don't you want to go meet some of these politicians? And he goes, why do I want to meet him? They said, well, you'll hear what he really wants to do. And Royko goes, don't you understand? Their whole job is to be able to get in front of a group of people and sound good. It has nothing to do with what they accomplish. He goes, they're supposed to sound good. If I show up and they don't make me feel good when I'm there, they're not very good at their job, which is being a politician. And by the way, they never got elected in the first place. I mean, I guess
on the other hand, Tom, if we also had media creatures who would pin them down.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. Yeah, but I'm saying
then we might learn more.
But even though I was involved in and talked to the people there, the veterans type of thing. I don't know if Tammy Duckworth, and however long she was there, say 2 years, I don't know if she straightened out the financing, and unbeknownst to me, because I never would have known it, instead of being 50% full after 2 years, it was 58% full, or it was 42. I have no way in. I'd say I was close to it. I have no way in knowing. I mean, the people who were on my committees at the CBOE, I was a committee chairman for, 8-10 years. Various committees, and there were people on my committee that had great ideas, showed up all the time, especially on membership. I always gave them the hardest folder to deal with, that kind of thing. How would anybody know that unless they came to me and asked, by the way, out of the 10 people, who was worth a crap? Nobody ever did. I mean, how would anybody have any idea if somebody really did some work, or they just wanted to say they were on a committee and I realized they were useless and gave them a couple of layup folders, and which I did, by the way. Every month before the meeting, Judy Deal, who was the head of membership at the CBO, would call me in and she'd say, here's the five tough ones, here's the five middle, and here's the five easy ones. I'll give the easy ones to these people. They don't know anything. And she goes, you better go through all the rest of them. I went through every single one of them before I gave them to anybody, even though the idea was a member was supposed to go through every file. Well, the hard ones I always went through. You know, I took the time. I was the chairman. So whenever I would interview somebody, I'd say, what did you think of the file? And they would go through it. I knew everything that was in there before I even asked them. I just did it for the benefit of other people. But there were people I could really count on and some that I couldn't. How do you and I as a voter... No, Mike Quigley, he's from here. I've met him a few times. Seems like a decent enough guy. He's gotten himself on a few of those committees in the House that are the double secret ones and covert operations and things like that. So I get the feeling that from that, the people in the House much think he's sharper than the average bear. But I don't really know. I mean, I get the feeling that those kind of people that get on those committees, be it Democrat or Republican, must be at least somewhat acknowledged by their peers as somebody, A, who could keep their mouth shut, and B, who actually brings something to the table and asks the right questions or maybe even does some work. But that's kind of anecdotal, isn't it? I mean, we have a couple of guys here in Chicago. I don't even know what committees are on. I don't think I've ever, I guess I resigned one. I haven't heard them do anything of any use for anybody. But that doesn't mean they don't. I just, what I'm saying? It is we all have huge opinions on these people. It's really hard to get a grasp if they're really any good or not. Even though we all seem to have strong opinions on anybody. I seems to be. I don't know if half of them are legit or not. You're right, you dig further than most, but just the general public, how the hell do I have an idea if Tommy Tuberville's a moron and trades all day, or whether he actually is on a committee doing something? How would I ever know that?
Well, You probably wouldn't in the current environment. It would be interesting to see, shouldn't we have committees publishing regular reports?
They're
what
probably
we did
there.
This month. Now, I realize some of them are classified and you can't really get into it, but shouldn't there be some report of accomplishments this month? Think of it as the daily scrum in software development.
Yeah.
What did you do yesterday? What are you going to do today? What obstacles have you encountered? Wouldn't that be a nice little a place to start?
Well, I'm sure they have minutes, but then again, if you start doing that, Kevin, as they say in the trading floor, there's so much information, it's like taking a drink out of a fire hydrant. You can't do it.
Well, then I guess you throw up your hands and say it's not knowable, we're stuck with what we have. I'm not willing to do that.
I'm not willing to do that either. I wish there was an easier way, but I mean, you know, we're not going to be voting on anybody for a while here. But plus the people who you in the primary, how do you have any?
Then you think?
Well, if you have the people in the primaries, everybody any idea if they're any good? I mean, when you start getting 5 and 10 people, and they don't know what they did. This guy's a community organizer. This guy was this. This guy was that. I mean, how do you have any clue? Even the Republicans the same way.
I will say, and I know you didn't listen to anything I sent you, but. If you get people to sit down for an hour or longer and talk with a good interviewer, I think you learn a lot about them.
They are not. I'm kind of with Mike Royko on this one. If you can't sit down and smooth somebody for an hour and a half, I mean, dictators through the world. I'm not accusing anybody, but dictators through the world have always been able to sit down and be. I read something the other day.
I know, Tom. It depends on the quality of the interviewer, though.
Well, I'm gonna say. I read the other day somebody had something about in Quora Digest, and they talked about how the hell was a total, madman like Adolf Hitler able to get where he was. And the answer from some guy was, I've interviewed all kinds of people, because I've been doing this my whole life, that actually had a sit-down with him and said he was the most engaging person you ever talked to. Loved kids. Kids loved him. He said, you would never have any idea the animal inside. Some of these guys are really good at this. I mean...
I get it. I still think with a good interviewer, you have a better chance to learn a lot than without him, so...
Well, there's still... On the other hand is...
But it also takes time that most people aren't willing to spend.
Well, that's right. And I also... The other thing is the CNBC... Oh, maybe a politician. Well, you remember what was his name? Was it Matt Murphy? When he was in the state legislature.
Yeah.
He came on the show a couple times, and we're talking 6 a.m. We were on a station at the time, but it was a small station. And I started asking him some serious questions. He goes, "Oh, so that's how the way you want to play?" He goes, "I can play like that at 6 a.m." Like pretty much said, nobody's listening anyway. and he was very forthright.
That's your Harry Doyle quote.
Yeah, well, he almost said the same thing. Bob Uecker, lobbed out an expletive, and Doyle's like, "Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway." I'm just saying, as we go down and trying to figure out who exactly we want leading us and where going into the future, this partisanship makes it. Very, very difficult because nobody ever. When's the last time somebody voted against the grain? I mean, any sort of a. And
I guess you get Rand Paul.
Well, but, yeah.
I would say the one thing I will say is just as I'm watching them try to negotiate this allegedly big, beautiful bill, that there is a lot of negotiation going on. I don't think anybody's gonna from the Republican side is going to vote against it when it goes in front of Congress.
Which bill are you talking about?
There's a lot of no going on right now.
Which bill are you talking about?
This is the reconciliation bill. That's going to be the Trump the agenda and budget for the next several years. It's going to include extending the tax cuts from. When was it, 2017?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think
that's a horrible idea. I think some of them should be extended and some not. I don't see.
Well, that's part of the discussion, though. There are parts of that that people don't want to extend. There are parts of that people want to modify.
I would really like. It's always been a serious pet peeve of mine, only because it hasn't changed. We haven't talked about this in a bit. Now, what if right now, and I'm sure as hell not predicting this, what if the market really were to take a tanker here and go down even 20-30%? You know, it's up that much, so it's certainly in the realm of possibility, but, you know, in the 2000, it was like 40% or 50. Does anybody other than me realize that, by the way, listeners out there, if you buy 1,000 shares of NVIDIA at 112.82 today, and a week from now sell it at 102, and you have a $10,000 loss, it's going to take you 3 1/3 years to write that off. Because you can only write off $3,000 of a capital loss per year. And we're talking massive amounts of money flying around with the market at this level. That number was $3,000 when I started in the business in 1981, and the Dow was 800. Now, why, Kevin, all these years has that number not gone up? With all the tax bills, with all the people there, evidently they, and yet...
All the gin joints in all the world.
Yeah, and yet we have stuff like, you can pass, a rich guy can pass, well, anybody can, rich guy can pass his stock to his kids, and they get the basis today and pay zero capital gains tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is insane. And we still can't get rid of the carried interest thing, where if a money manager gets a bonus on a hedge fund, that his bonus is not ordinary income; it's capital gains, which is really insane because he has no money up. Yeah, these are such easy things to fix. Why can't there be some sort of CPI drop on capital gains? I mean, if you bought something in 1960 and sold it today for 40% higher, you haven't even kept up with inflation. You haven't made any money. Yet if you bought something a year and a day ago and you got a 40% higher, why is that half? Why isn't it half minus the inflation this year of 10%? These are the simplest things that I don't see how anybody could argue, and they're not even on anybody's agenda. And I could probably go on. I mean, can anybody think of why the capital loss provision is the same as it was when the market was 1/40th the size?
No, and I don't know that anybody's debating such a thing. There are some very in the weeds things like that people are debating, but I've never heard anybody raise that issue.
Well, I hope you don't.
So there you are.
Well, you know, what's going to happen? All these people lose all this money on Bitcoin if it ever goes down. It may not, but what people are going to take that as a capital loss. You better live a long time. 3,000 a year. What if you lose 100 grand? You better be young. 33 years to get your money back? That's a while.
Fortunately, so many of the people who are investing in Bitcoin are young, so they'll be fine in the long haul.
Well, it's... In the long run,
we all die.
Yeah, I was gonna say, in the long run, we're all dead. I guess it's all okay. But it's crazy stuff. Hey, I didn't check this morning. The guy who fell out of the stands in Pittsburgh, is he still alive?
I have no idea.
That was pretty weird. It was.
So I because they wouldn't put the camera on it, so I really didn't.
I did see it. I did see a guy go down. It didn't look like anybody pushed him.
So he fell. So the question I would have is, why did he fall? Did he fall because he was having some kind of other health event that, and he keeled over, or did he? You know, and then what was the result of the fall in terms of, did he injure himself, like, you know, breaking a leg or a hip or an arm or something, or was it a much more serious injury where he was convulsing or something like that? And I don't know the answer to that in what was going on in real time. So that would probably tip us off a little bit as to what the end result is.
He flipped like three times on the way down. Like he either was unconscious or he was like a diver. So I'm thinking something might have happened to him that caused him to fall, like you said.
Yeah. On occasion, there are. Yeah, I would suspect that was it, because I don't know why anybody would just fall. It's not like there was a ball to reach for or anything like that where he just lost his balance.
There were no people.
So that's what I would suspect, but that's just speculation.
Still pretty eerie, huh?
Yeah.
The Cubs, by the way, we talked earlier in the year, where are they going to get their 20 hits? I think they got them.
Yeah, I do. I think they got him. Plus they're getting him. They're not just getting him from Tucker, but they're also getting him from Crow Armstrong, and they're getting them from Suzuki.
Yeah, the shortstop's not helping. The catchers sure are.
No, although he's hit two home runs this in the last series, so maybe he's starting to snap out of it. Dansby Swanson isn't a great hitter, but his first year with the Cubs, he was a good hitter.
Yeah.
And a contributor, but last year he wasn't good, and the first part of this year he wasn't good at all. Hopefully that comes around. You know, most guys in the major leagues, you can look up once they have established themselves in a career pattern. Most of the time, you look at him and say, "Yeah, he may have started the season terribly, but by the end of the season, he's going to be right around his numbers." That's what I kept thinking with Swanson last year, and it never happened. So, you know, that would be the concern this year, is he ain't going to get back to the numbers this year either. He's a really good shortstop.
Yeah, is this third base the curse of Bill Madlock or what?
Could be.
They can't.
You know, I think the rookie that they had out, they just had him up too soon. I don't know if that means we'll see him back later this year, a little bit more ready to compete. I mean, you saw that with Crow Armstrong last year, where he just, you know, first half of the year, he was overmatched.
Well,
they stuck with him, and he started to come around at the end, and he's been really good this year.
Well, the difference with him, well, I think part of the difference with him, and then we'll dash the break here, is when he was Double A, I read that everybody in baseball said he already was the best center fielder in baseball, major league included.
Yeah, yeah, and you can ride with a guy when he's really good on defense, especially if your team's not that good.
But then he was so overmatched that they sent him down, but gradually, the last time he went down, it was pretty obvious that he was mangling Triple A pitching pretty good, that he had to be here, not there. And then, unfortunately, it hadn't taken too long, but he is real. I saw him make a play the other day, Kevin, and he ran under his ball. I don't think anybody in baseball could have got that ball. I mean, he's four or five chances a week, I think, ahead of. There's a guy who's in the Hall of Fame considered one of the best center fielders. This is real hard to do these days. Well, maybe it isn't with outfielders, because they pretty much play every day. You used to judge your fielders not so much on the amount of errors, but the amount of chances. And Ron Santo, every year, used to lead the league in chances, meaning he's getting the balls other people aren't getting too. So if you get like 60 more chances than somebody else, God's sake, that's like the two outs a week that you're getting from that spot that nobody else is getting. It in Major League Ball, we play every day. Those kinds of statistics don't sound like much, but I tell you what, I mean, we used to, our softball team, we didn't have as big of bangers as some of the other teams, but we would average probably 1.5 double plays a game. Nobody we played against averaged that. That's giving yourself 2 to 3 outs that nobody else gets. And over a period of a season, it's a big deal, even though in any given game it just looks like one nice play, right? By the way, did you see the triple play that wasn't?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you got to see that. These teams got, I forget which one it was. It's two major league teams. Maybe you can Google it on a break. The guy hits a line drive towards first. The guy goes to his right, puts his glove down, traps the ball. And it was close, but he traps the ball. The runners were running. It was like on a double steal. So he wings the ball to second. So the guy who left second early, he's out. They wing the ball back to first. And the batter is now standing on first base. But he tags first. So the guy who took off, now he's now out. So it's a triple play. The replay showed conclusively that the guy trapped the ball.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get you.
And but evidently you can't replay a line drive in the infield. Why that is, I don't know. But even the two guys should have been on second and third, and the other guy made it to first base before the ball came back. So instead of bases loaded, nobody out, the inning was over. I've never seen that. Have you?
I haven't. Yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, what?
Then I think they lost by one run.
The game. Yeah, how do you correct that?
I mean, well, first of all, it's not reviewable, which I don't get. It maybe will be after this incident, but then how would you put that back together? I guess I mean, what would you even say?
Just call do over.
Well, it'd be different if he threw.
It'd be just like arguing it out at the park and when you were kids.
See, I don't. When he threw the ball to second, I think the guy was already there from first, so you wouldn't even have gotten that force out. I mean, it's one thing if he trapped it and he won at the second to double the guy off who left second, but you at least would have forced the guy from first to second. I think he was already there, so nobody would have been out. I mean, the circumstances are so bizarre, because if the guys weren't running, you at least, the guy at second who you thought you were getting out, the guy who was on second, you would at least have had the guy going from first to second. He's the guy that would have been out, right, if it would have been a force play.
Yeah.
Well, but he was already there, so he wouldn't have been out either. The one guy's on third, the other guy's already on second, and by the time they threw the ball back to first to force out the guy on first who has now ran to second, the batter is standing on first. So you wouldn't have got his force out either. I can't even conceive of that ever happening again. Where it had to happen on it, where the guys had both taken off and both were already at the other base. I mean, it's bizarre to watch. The manager's going, what the hell? We're going to the dugout. We should have bags loaded, nobody out. He was not happy.
Hey, I have for you the StatCast, the run value, in other words, run saved. The run value number one in the major leagues is Pete Crow Armstrong.
Yeah, he's like a
who do you think is the next highest rated guy on the Cubs?
I'll probably say the shortstop.
Yeah, and it isn't. It's actually the second baseman, and I'm not surprised.
It's
Nico Hoerner. He's number 49 in the majors. And then if you want the, I'll ask you for one more guy off the Cubs, and I'm doing this by eye scan, so I hope I don't miss anybody. But yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna bet it's Ian Happ.
And no, it is not. It is Miguel Amaya.
Really, the catcher?
Yeah, at one.
He's pretty good.
One per game. Wow. And this list even gets into negatives and.
How do you stat cast a catcher? They don't usually. Is that on putouts or throwouts or what is that? Or all of that?
I don't know. I'd have to go look at all of the. Oh, catching includes framing and things like that, which one of these days is going to be a worthless skill. It's very valued now, but it will be considered a worthless skill. Well, number 10, I notice, is one of my favorite players, Alejandro Kirk, the catcher for Toronto.
Really?
The reason he's one of my favorite is he's about 5'8", tall and wide.
Oh, he's a, so.
And yet he's really good ball player.
As my brother used to say about short, Shelby Peters, if he was an inch taller, he'd be a perfect sphere. Anyway, SP Futures only up 19 now. NASDAQ Futures up 43. By the way, this is a big Labor Day. So we have our big show with Carl at the bottom of the hour here. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P Futures are, well, I got to get back here to the, S&P Futures are up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 44. In some earnings last night, Apple actually is down 742. The rest of these stocks were really up, but Apple is not. It's down 3.5%. Meta is up again today, 579. I'm not a Facebook person, so I don't really know that much about what those guys do, but evidently their advertising is up. The reason why I'm not a Facebook person is if you're regulated to the extreme, like I am, with all the numbers behind my name, series this, series that, series this. Everything I do is considered communication to potential clients or something. So you really don't want to be lobbing stuff out on Facebook if you know, people might take it the wrong way. God knows, people take things the wrong way. Now, Dow futures are up 186. Like I said, individual stocks in the Dow. Amgen's up 4. American Express up 350. Triple M up 161. Caterpillar up 350. Goldman Sachs up 690. So pretty much green in the Dow here this morning. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 378, 1%. They've been pretty strong. Hang Seng up 385, 1.7. Again, it's the China is evaluating the possibility of trade talks. But I can pretty much guarantee that somebody in China went long futures before that got out. Just me. Shanghai down 7. Again, this thing has become a total non-player to Shanghai. We'll ask Russell about that next Wednesday. He knows more about that than I do. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 401, 1.7%. Again, gaining on China-U.S. optimism. Eurozone inflation steady. FTSE up 70.8%. CAC run up 121.6%. Bonds down 1 basis point, 4.22. Bund up 3 basis points, 2.48. Oil. This is oil, 58.73, down 50 cents. And I was looking at the, I'll do it after we're done with this, but I was looking at the oil production charts in the field. Really hasn't gone down much, which I'm kind of surprised because the oil's down $72 a few weeks ago. Now it's 58. So it's got to be below somebody's break even. Brent down 47 cents, 61.64. Natural gas unchanged, 3.48. Gold, which has been getting clobbered, is up 52 bucks today, so a little bit of a dead cat bounce. It's up 1.6%. Silver up 13 cents, 0.4%. Copper up 4 cents. That's a full 1%. Foreign exchange, dollar on back foot. Back foot, whatever that means. So we've got the pound up again, the euro up again, 113.4. The British pound, 133. So the dollar's gotten kind of clobbered in the last couple of months. I don't know what policy that's causing or what that is, but it has been, it's a pretty big move. Crypto, Bitcoin up 354, 96,966, trying to make its move toward 100,000. A lot of stuff there, Ricky. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:43 a.m. here in Chicago. 47 degrees right now with a high of 52. Some sun with a possible shower or two. Cooler and breezy this afternoon. Tonight will be cloudy with a shower in places and breezy late with a low of 44 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 71 degrees right now with a high of 94. Warm with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be low with and clear with a low of 67 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Edens from Lane Cook. We're looking at 24 minutes. 20 minutes, Iman Eisenhower from Wolf. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And lastly, 21 minutes, Iman Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan. Let's talk baseball real quick. Cubs beat Pirates yesterday, 8-3. Diamondbacks beat Mets, 4-2. And White Sox beat Brewers, 8-0. I like that one. Today we have Diamondbacks at Phillies at 5:45 p.m. Astros at White Sox at 6:40 p.m. And Cubs at Brewers, 7:10 p.m. NBA yesterday, Knicks beat Pistons 116-113 and win the series 4-2. Clippers beat Nuggets 111-105. This is tying the series 3-3. And today we got the Rockets at Warriors at 8 p.m. with Golden State leading the series coming in with 3-2. Lastly, NHL playoffs, Jets at Blues today at 7 p.m. Back over to you guys.
The Ricky, if you're a White Sox fan, you have to really take these rare wins to heart.
Right, so this is rare then.
Yes.
Well, and Cubs fans are happy because they beat the Brewers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing for Chicago sports.
Hey, Kevin, I got a.
I got one for you too. Right. So go ahead and then.
Well, this is kind of a long one. But the Chicago area here. I mean, I know a lot of people that. Well, I would say I worked at Pullman. I know a lot of people that had manufacturing jobs, and maybe live to regret it. That's why whenever we have the debate on the show regarding education versus, I use the term blue-collar jobs, I'm always of the mind that they're two totally separate subjects. Your education is your education, and your job is your job. And the idea that somebody is a welder, somehow he shouldn't go to school, that frosts the hell out of me, because I didn't have to go to school to become a trader or to be a broker on the floor or something. All I had to do was know how to add and subtract. But the fact is, since I did, and there is no floor anymore, I've been able to move into other areas and do different things. And I just, Kevin, the as we talk about bringing jobs back, I'm with you on that. The idea of, in the Chicago area that used to be so industrial, and a lot of people's now maybe grandfathers or older uncles or whatever, worked in those places and maybe made a good buck, Certainly were able to, a good buck relatively to the time, because you were able to afford the car, the house, and other stuff where now people maybe can't. The sum of policy, I don't know, even if those jobs come back, if anybody really wants their son or certainly their daughter to look at that as there's such a bad taste in your mouth in Chicago and those companies that left. I mean, somebody very close to me, her dad, managed to make it to 96, which is pretty cool. Terrific guy. He worked for Ryerson Steel for a long time, and always was very proud whenever we went by the Hancock building, saying a lot of those beams, he's the one who drilled the holes for them. And he knew they were in the right spot, and that building was never coming down. I mean, there was a pride to the whole thing, but when he was still working way past 65, I think, and the guy who ran the plant knew him real well, and he said to him, "Hey, Elmer, come in here for a minute, will you?" He goes, "I don't want to lose you as an employee, but you better retire." And he goes, "What are you talking about?" He says, "I think we're going to get bought by somebody, and I think they're going to try and screw everybody out of their pension. So if I were you, I would take mine now." So he did, even though he didn't really want to quit. Well, it could have been 6 months later. Somehow or another, they drain money out of the pension fund, and they're all the guys who are left are with that U.S. with the pension guarantee or some crap, where it's way less than they were supposed to get. Same thing happened at Ream, I think. I don't know how with the ERISA laws. I mean, Carl's always ranting and raving, legitimately.
Carl doesn't rant and rave.
Well, I mean, about how the people who do those kinds of things,
discussed forcefully.
Yes, but how the people who do those kinds of things should at least be in jail, or at least not have been allowed to have. How somebody could possibly, after the late 70s, early 80s, when your pension funds were so overfunded because you were able to get 12% on money in the bank, how those places managed to move that money out of the pension funds by a bunch of little tricks, by buying the place and changing the name and all those kinds of things, and nobody ever got spanked for it. I don't get, but the, I'm saying, Kevin, is the entire, on one hand, it's one thing to say, I want jobs back in this country, which I do, but I also want to look at, quote, the job. And it's and you can't just get to the point where somebody else's kid is going to be the one sewing the blue jeans instead of the guy in China. I don't want my kid sewing blue jeans. I mean, there's a lot more to this, and I think you have a feel for it because you're in an area where a lot of this stuff is happening. I want the stuff back, but I kind of just want the good stuff back, and I don't want these companies here for 10 years and blowing these people off with nothing. Now, today, if you have a 401k or something, it's kind of harder to do that. But you get a sense of what I'm talking about. There's not a good feeling in this area. Even Pullman, for God's sake. There were three generational people. Pullman, all of a sudden, one day they're all gone. We're talking thousands of people. But there's not a good feeling towards this kind of stuff in this area. I mean, how do you get that back?
Well, first of all, there is a whole lot of manufacturing that is very high tech and requires a lot of skill, such that you may not need a college degree to do the job. You may not need a bachelor's degree, but you do need something beyond high school, whether it's industry certifications, whether it's short curriculum or something like that. And there is a lot of that. There is still a whole lot of the old style manufacturing that is uncomfortable. It's really hard work, and yes, most parents don't aspire. That's not their aspiration for their children. The jobs still pay well, and so they have an attraction for that, especially for people who where the alternative is working fast food or something like that. So you have to factor in the alternative types of jobs as well. So I think that's a big part of it. All in all, it really is. Look, if you're going to bring back a lot of manufacturing, what you're paying for is cheap labor overseas. You're not getting cheap labor in the United States, not to that extent anyway. I mean, you know how you get cheap labor in the United States? You hire people who are in the country illegally and take advantage of them. Otherwise, you're not getting cheap labor. So So what do you do? If you're really going to bring it back, you're going to bring it back with a much higher degree of automation compared to what's being done overseas. And that will pay off. It will work, but then that's demanding from the workforce a whole different skill set, much, much different from what you think of when you think of, you know, your standard old line manufacturing.
I would agree with that. Well, you're going to be able to pay people more if the power is cheaper, if the factory is like you say more automated or just more efficient.
Oh yeah, if you're looking at your overall cost structure, yeah.
I mean, granted, if you're in some world.
The problem with automation always is it's a big capital expenditure. How fast are you willing to, you know, how long are you willing to stretch out the payback for it? And we. Historically, recent history. I remember the days when, hey, if you get a 3-year payback, yeah, let's do it. And you know that hasn't been the way it is in recent years. It's more like it better be 18 months, and could you really make it 12?
Well, yeah. I mean,
you're not going to get those kind of paybacks when you're trading, you know, labor dollars like that. You're going. It might be 4 or 5 years, but if it is. You're solid. You regain control over your supply chain, and you're not subject to the whims of geopolitics to the degree.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a certain stuff that I don't know if you guys ever get to this in your economics classes, but it's a pretty complicated part of economics, and it's called comparative advantage. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, but
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But it even says that if you are a, I'll be real simple, if you're a farmer and do everything, say you do 5 things, you got dairy cows, you got you're running steers, you're running some corn, you're doing 5 different things, and the guy next door to you is doing the same 5 things, even if you're more efficient than he is on all 5 of them. It still is probably, if you do the math on all 5 of the different things, you're still better off buying some of the stuff that he's best at, to where you're, like, closest at. So you can accentuate your efforts on the stuff you're way better at.
Yeah, companies that are able to focus tend to do very well.
Yeah. So even if, for instance, Pullman could be a little better at pumping out these side posts for the car, than somebody else, a little more efficient, probably the stuff that you're really efficient at, way better than anybody else, you're better off buying the side posts from another guy for even a little more cost, because now your guys can focus on the stuff that you're way better at. But to do that mathematically is pretty tough to do. I don't think I could do it today, Kevin. I could at one time. But it's a concept that you know you don't really get. So even if you know we're better in this country than somebody and everything else, it doesn't mean there shouldn't be trade.
Well, but it isn't really, in general, and this is very broad brush, so it's not 100% true, but in general, it isn't that we're better, it's that they're cheaper. And that doesn't mean they're making a better product, and it also doesn't mean that we should swallow, we should just say it's cheaper, so let's do it, with no consideration for labor practices and pollution and all of those things that come into play.
Kevin, how much?
And that's, we talked about this before. That's an ethical choice that companies make to save labor dollars, and nobody has ever held to account for it. There is no penalty in the market for doing it, unfortunately. And so they do it.
A quick question, and this is just from your overall opinion, you've been around a while. How much of the moves that you see people make going somewhere else, if you had to put a young me and maybe a young you in there for 2 weeks and you gave us all the numbers, how much of the moves are actually really worth it, or there was something else to it? Example, I don't know. I probably mentioned this before on the air. I don't know if I mentioned when you were on. One day, I was decided to go see a few ballparks. I needed a break, so I went to Pittsburgh and I went to Cleveland, and I'm in the park at Cleveland, and this lady sitting next to me with these two kids, and I noticed them because they both looked the same. Duh, they were twins. And they're both taller than me, which is pretty rare when I was 6'4". I started talking to the lady, and those were her boys, and she brought them here. She worked in, I think she was in Jackson, Michigan. I'm not positive, but somewhere there. And she was, they made fuel injectors. So they actually worked, did they start out with GM or Ford? They became, who's the firm that makes the parts for all of them? It begins with a D, what the hell's in their name? They're always Delco. About, what?
Delco?
No, they're considered part of the auto workers union, but they're sort of a split off in that they make stuff for all the different people. Anyway, but she worked, and they made fuel injectors. She said, we made the best fuel injectors in the world, and we sold them to Jaguar, and everybody bought our fuel injectors. And so all of a sudden, she goes, somebody gets a hair up their ass, that because the manufacturing was, you know, falling apart up in, like, Syracuse, that whole area where they used to make locomotives and everything, we're going to move up there, and we could get cheaper labor. And I said, you know, hey, you know, what happened to your husband? Well, he died of this really rare form of brain cancer. And she goes, there were like five or six other people in the plant that had the same thing and died from it. And I'm sitting there, whoa. I wonder if they moved that plant because they were worried about these people having an issue. And she said it took, they had to move something like a million different tools and parts and machines. And she was part of packaging all the stuff up and sending it to wherever the hell it was. And up there, they had drug tests and people there because there was no work for so long. It took them 6 months to get enough people to pass a drug test to start the place going. And I'm sitting there thinking, Kevin, boy, if I could put pen and paper to that, I will bet you that the big consideration was these people having this rare form of cancer, and we got to get the hell out of here. And I have the feeling the same thing happened to Rheem in Chicago here when they moved their plant, wherever the hell they moved it, where they told people you can move, I don't know, with South Texas or Mexico or some damn place, and if you didn't move, that's considered, you're considered out and you get screwed on your pension or something. I wonder if, at the end of the day, if you and I couldn't find a lot of these moves, A, weren't worth it, or B, were done for some other kind of reason. Now, the ones where you're going to China and they're sewing blue jeans together for 50 cents an hour, those I think we both agree on. But I wonder if some of them aren't for those reasons. Just saying.
Well, yeah, there could be, and things that they don't want public. So, you know, they'll make it known. But I think most of it has always been a cost play. It's been partly a cost play, but it's also, it's been a union bust as well. And, you know, there's a lot of situations where unions overplayed their hands. They had the power over the negotiation power for a long time. And when you finally overplay it one too many times and the world changes, and the world has changed, which it started to do in the 60s and did dramatically into the 70s, all of a sudden the unions didn't have the bargaining power that they thought they did. And I think especially in the automotive industry, they just looked and said, okay, fine, Mexico, here we come.
Well, some of that is kind of somewhat odd, Kevin, in that when unions, I mean, you and I think of, believe it or not, we probably both agree on the idea of public unions, because that's not really an arm's length transaction. But when you come right down to it, your unions at your manufacturing unions, to a certain extent, are a fight over the pie, right? Who gets what piece of the pie?
Yeah.
And you could make the case, if you wanted to be, you know, sling an arrow or two at upper management, is that at Pullman, you know, there was a strike, and, you know, the unions got this much, and a lot of people would say they overplayed their hand. Okay, maybe. But the unions, the people in the plant were making, I got to ask some of my old Pullman guys. I think they were making like $18 an hour or something like that. You could make $40,000 a year if you worked a little overtime, which in 1977 was, you know, real dough. And the chairman of the place was making $250. Now I think when you move the unions out of there, and now you can play the unions less in either a southern state or or you pay them, you know, next to nothing, say in China. It's not like the chairman's. I think the swing in the pie, now the chairman thinks he's worth $20 million. It's a big, you know, as Eric used to talk about, this management class is incredibly overpaid in terms of what half the time what they accomplish. I don't know that the pie that you and I as a consumer have gotten that much better of a deal. Just different people are getting paid. I mean, you compare to what the head of GM was making 1978 versus what this lady's making today. I don't even think you're on the same planet, are you?
Probably not. I don't think so. I think when I'm talking about them overplaying their hand, the tactic was always that they would pick out an auto manufacturer and say, who is the most vulnerable?
Who is
the one who can least afford a strike? They would target them. And they would either cause a strike, which would be debilitating to the company, or they would, they would capitulate. And then once they finally got that deal, then they used that to set the market for the other automakers. So that's what I mean by, you know, that was the game.
It was worse than the game,
and it was very effective for a long, long time for them. But then they got better alternatives. They got alternatives that were a different labor market.
You know what
and,
I think?
And that's what I mean by, you know, like, I don't know, overplay the hand might not be it. Maybe it's failure to see what's emerging.
Well, two quick ones on that, then we'll go to Carl. In the construction industry, it was even worse that we were talking about, Kevin, because there might be 50 electricians, 50, you know, carpenters working in a building. There might be two guys that operate the piggy move up crane, you know, whatever. That's one of the biggest, best inventions in the history of construction. What's the crane that you, every time you finish a floor, you walk the crane up? That's how you call those things. When you just see the big crane sitting on top of it.
They should call them automated guided vehicles.
Well, what I'm saying, the crane operators, there might be three or four on the job. But if those guys went out on strike,
everybody else was out of work, yeah.
So you only had. So you sit there and go, "Hey, pay those idiots whatever they want. We got to get these people back to work." Well, then all of a sudden the next week the electrician goes, "Hey, you're paying a crane operator $50 an hour, and I'm making 20. What the bleep, right?" So it kind of went down the chain like you're talking about. But you know, I actually think, Kevin, this is economically, at a time of inflation, which is something we better be careful of this time. Back in the '70s, when we had inflation really from '68 on. All these unions came to get a contract, and they ended up having cost of living clauses in most of these contracts. And I had to deal with it when I was at Pullman, because you know you sign a deal, and I don't know why today unions aren't doing that. I mean, they're idiots, I think, because I think inflation's going to go higher than it is. But they had that. So when Volcker came in, there's somehow or another there's this lag between the actual numbers going up. Sales numbers, I mean, the price is going up, and when the CPI comes out. I don't know why that is. You would think if somebody goes out and checks out rice this week, it would be current, but evidently it's not. So when the inflation actually started to come down in the 79, 80, maybe even 82, somewhere in there, the CPI kept pumping out inflation numbers that I think were in arrears. So for probably 6 months to a year and a half, maybe even two, you had these unions getting raises that I don't think were justified. So the guy who started out making, you know, $8 an hour, now he's up to 14, the last $2 or $3 that they got, I don't think was justified, and that's when everybody looked at it and said, boy, these guys aren't worth 17 an hour or 20, whatever it was. I think the inflation clauses caused that, and if the CPI would have been more current, I'm not so sure it would have happened. But this is a little bit of a thing, and because it was something I was akin to. But I think that the last year or so, when we were pumping all these inflation numbers from the people we were building the cars for, and back to the unions and the guys with the trucks and everything else, I don't think that they were real numbers, Kevin. I think there's a lag on this stuff, and that's when I think the unions actually didn't overplay their hand on purpose, but ended up making more than, I'm going to use the term, they were actually worth. Is that that make any sense at all to you?
Yeah, but their economists were as good as anybody else's economists. They knew what the you know, they probably had a sense of the reality versus what was being reported just as well as anybody else.
Well, but I mean, but the contracts had been in place long before Volcker came in and then went and took it down the other way. I mean, so I don't know that anybody was smart enough as an economist to anticipate that. But anywho, we have to go to Carl. What do you got going this weekend? Anything?
No, I got a big, you know, the big Ivy Tech fundraiser tonight. They raise a whole lot of money at this event. So I have to, this is the one day a year when I put on a jacket and tie and go schmooze with people. It's a nice time.
So are you donating like season tickets to the White Sox for silent auction or something?
No. Well, I'm donating my time. We always invite a group of students who are really high achievers, so that the donors can meet some of our high achieving students. And it's a big time event.
Now, is that fair? Shouldn't you have to bring some of the schlumps too?
I'm the schlump. I get to be the schlump.
I mean, some student that just never showed up.
We'll see. You want to come? You want to come? Put on, that like the that little schoolboy shorts and
oh god,
nobody wants to see that type of outfit. And I'll say this is one of my slower students, Tommy.
he's still in the first class. And look at him, how old he is. He's taking the same.
We have just real quickly. One of my favorite people, and I've worked with him a lot. We have a guy in his 60s completing his associate's degree and going on for his bachelor's degree after this year, who is the president of his company, and he never went to college. He's one of those self-made guys, and his CFO, who has a master's in accounting, challenged him. He said, Kurt, why didn't you ever go to college? And he said, well, I went to work out of high school and we got married and had kids, and I just never had time for it. And the guy says, well, what's stopping you now?
Yeah.
He said, nothing. So here he is, and he's been an outstanding student. It was really hard for him. He had to take algebra and calculus and things like that. Accounting was a challenge. Not so much that a CEO can't handle it, but that he it's a lot of work, and of course maintaining everything else in his life. And he's a real cool story. So,
I think it'd be fun to do it if it's your first time. If it was me, having to go back and take all the stuff that I forgot, I don't think that'd be any kind of fun.
Here, take
calculus. Oh, don't worry. I already took calculus. Yeah, but you don't know how to do any of these problems. Well, yeah, that's an issue.
that's a minor issue. That's a nit. Just pick a nit.
I think I could still be all right on the accounting and the finance. It would just take a little brushing up, but boy, the calculus, not so much. Chemistry, not so much.
So anyway, let me put you in Kurt's. Kurt's the other guy. Let me put you in Carl's able hands, and I will. I'll see you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bud. We're going right to Carl. You with us?
I am.
What did you think of the discussion about, essentially blue collar labor in a city like Chicago, and all you just see is empty places, and pretty much everybody who worked there got screwed. It's a bad taste.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. But I mean, it's. As I have pointed out repeatedly, people respond to incentives, okay? And so, and ethics be blankety-blanked, morals be blankety-blanked, people respond to economic incentives. And we have, if you're going to pass a law, when I was running MCS, there's this huge poster that you have to have in your break room, right? It has to be somewhere that your employees can see all of it. And it's all the labor law stuff, right?
Yep.
If you work over 40 hours in a week, you have to get paid time and a half, all this, know your rights, big thing. Legally has to be there where everybody, and typically most places, where do they stick it? Right next to the time clock. duh.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, that's where it is. Well, that's where it was at our place, too. It was, you know, in the break room, right there by the time clock. And, you know, all of that is all U.S.-centric. Absolutely zero of those things apply to someone that you hire in China.
Yeah.
Zero. And or Mexico, okay? And
Mexico any better than it was 20 years ago?
Well, you know, it's hard. It's hard for me to say, Chief, because, you know, obviously I'm not a Mexican resident, right? I'm an American. But in some areas, I think it's actually worse because the, you know, we just got rid of this FACTA thing, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Okay, I mean, Trump has basically said, well, you know, that needs to go away, you know, because it's just the way it is that you have to grease people's palms. And the entire reason Congress passed that law is because why do you bribe?
Well, did Congress repeal it, or Trump think he can dictate?
Well, I'm not sure. It isn't actually gone at this point.
Or he's not going to enforce it.
But it's, well, that, and it's one of the things that he wants gone, okay? And the problem with this is that it's the same issue that you have with the offshoring of labor, all right? When you really get down to it, what it comes down to is that we have a set of standards and a set of laws in the United States. Of course, we only enforce them when we feel like it, right? I mean,
yep.
All of what has screwed up the labor cost computation as regards healthcare, which is a huge, absolutely enormous piece of the whole. And for people in the lower, and it's extremely regressive, all right, which is one of the things that, you know, I mean, that you harp on all the time, right, is the regressive nature of, you know, some policies, all right. Well, if you want to see something that is ridiculously regressive, all you have to do is look at the fact that we refuse to punish anybody that violates any of the 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 stuff in the medical system. And the reason it's regressive is that the cost per person is approximately the same, but the percentage of that as it relates to your earnings power is entirely dependent upon your earnings power. Okay, if I make $1 million a year, the fact that it costs me, you know, $15,000 a year for crappy insurance, or, you know, crappy health coverage that basically pays for nothing unless I get run over by a bus, and then, you know, I still have to come up with 10 grand, but then it covers some. Or I get paid 20 and get something that's actually decent, all right? But out of $1 million a year, that's not a huge percentage of my compensation. It's not that much money, all right? What if I make $20 an hour? It's 50% of my compensation.
Oh, you're totally screwed.
Well, you're not going to get it, okay, is what it comes down to. And so it's insanely regressive, and yet this is where the problem lies, because whether you like it or not, you know, skills matter, and yet there, intelligence and capacity to do things is a bell curve. All right, there's nothing that can be done about that. That's a fact. And everybody loves to dream of the idea that, you know, their kid's going to be the, you know, the top 2%. It's going to be the rocket scientist, have the Einstein level IQ and everything else. And by the way, not just the intelligence, because intelligence is not enough. They also would have to want to go down that road and put up with whatever the BS is. And some kids will look at this and say, I can do this. I refuse. Okay, why? Because I'm not going to get stuck in the butt for the next 40 years and then get screwed like so many people did during the, you know, the 1960s and 1970s.
How did two technical questions here, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, because I should know it and I don't. I was my good friend Robin, who was on the show with us a bunch of times, the one who died in a car crash, got run over by a car while for a walk. Anyway, she was on the Pullman Pension Board, and I don't remember. There were classes in college on ERISA laws. And whoever put that together, ERISA laws had to do with pension funds. It was about as detailed as you can get about how these firms had to behave, how the pension had to be separate, and by the way, you need a pension board and all this kind of stuff. And if you were looked at it as a senator or representative, you probably would have figured out there's no way people can screw with this. Yet, guess what?
You know, they did.
They did. And but how, I still don't understand. Now, Pullman was one of the classic takeover candidates because they really ran the pension fund very conservatively. Pullman was the oldest company on the New York Stock Exchange. And that, you know, not the biggest, but they were the oldest. And they were, had to be, I don't know if they were an original, but they must have been, a, whatever, but they were pretty close. And so they had really extra money in there when they were making 12% on stuff you just left in the bank, because I think their number, for those that, I don't want to get too technical here, but you need three things to run a pension fund. You need your actuarial stuff, how long all your people are going to live, and what age they all are. You need the amount you're going to pay people at this, at when they retire, and you need a number of what you think you're going to make per year over the next 40 years. And most, and they would debate that number. Maybe it would be 4%, 3.5%, 4.5%, whatever you thought the market would bear. And once in a while, you would change it. And then if you put those three together, it pops up with a number that you got to contribute every month, right, Carl? But you just right. do the math. And
yeah, it's just a math problem.
And I mean, you know, obviously, you're banking a lot on your what they call it, actuarial dudes and stuff. But by the way, so everybody had a number like 4, and all of a sudden you're making 12 for a period of 6-7 years, so everybody's overfunded.
Right.
Well, Pullman can't take the money out of there.
You can't steal it.
You
right.
can't steal it. But a little loophole in the law is if somebody else bought the place, they right. could now revalue the whole mess.
And right, and start and basically
start over.
Now, right, recompute it all. Right.
So what happened to us at Pullman? What do they say when you're not? You're not into something for 5 years. What do they call that?
You're not vested.
Well, you have to vest everybody. So what Pullman did, they took everybody, because I don't even know, like 4.5 years. You have to vest everybody. And they went out and bought everybody individual actuarial policies where they could say, Tom, you're going to get $200 a month when you're 65, or we'll give you like $100 today, that kind of crap.
And, right.
And so you could at least do that and get people somewhat sort of hold. Now, you didn't have your job anymore, and then you could take the rest of the cash. I still don't understand how come some firms were able to, maybe they took the money out and then lost money in the fund, but some of these funds 4 and 5 years later, like the Inland Steel and some of these other places, I think Inland was one of them that bought Ryerson, they ended up with the thing totally underfunded to the point where they didn't have any money left, and they ended up going kicking it to this federal thing where you're making like nothing. And plus, I think if you retired early with the federal thing, Carl, if you retired at 60, they wanted you to pay the money back between 60 and 65 because they didn't want anybody paid before. Some bizarre. So somehow they went from overfunded, stealing the overfunded part, to being underfunded, closing the place up, and people getting screwed. I don't know how those last two steps took place. Do you?
Well. Yeah, you find something. See, this is the problem with nobody goes to jail.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
You can't find a non-existent entity. You can't find a bankrupt estate. Okay, finding a bank. I mean, you can, but it doesn't do anything because there's nothing to get. So, I mean, this is one of the problems that you know. And by the way, The congressional people that originally wrote the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act recognized this. The people who wrote 8 U.S.C. 1324 relating to illegal immigration in the 1950s, they recognized this. They all understood that finding a bankrupt entity is of course a waste of time. And the other problem is that if you find somebody that is in any kind of oligarchical line of business where you have allowed that to go on, you haven't enforced antitrust law, you have, you know, you've got well, I mean, you take a look at the situation now with, like, for example, personal finance software. It is all subscription based. There is no company that makes
it. Is that why Microsoft keeps growing like a weed?
Well, it's everybody, you know, same thing with office software, right? You know, word processing and things like, you know, basic functional stuff that every business needs. And all of it, you know, it used to be that you bought Microsoft Office 2007, okay? And you had Microsoft Office 2007. And by the way, I happen to have an old license for it that it still works perfectly fine. Then Microsoft decides, well, we're not doing it anymore. Now, if you want this new feature, you have to go to the subscriptions and you have to pay every year. Well, wait a minute. Since when? I mean, what if I just want a working word processor and a working spreadsheet? Okay, I mean, that's what I do, right? That's what I need it for.
Yeah.
Is to write business documents. Do mail merges and do calculation sheets. Well, in some cases, these guys have gone so far, Adobe did this, they turned off the authentication servers. So if your machine crashes and you have to reinstall the software, you can't. You bought it and they just stole it from you. So I have a paid up perpetual license for the Adobe Creative Suite. It's old, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, except I can't use it anymore because they shut the authentication server off. My machine failed and had to be replaced. And when I went to reinstall it, the servers are offline. And so it won't authenticate. I have a valid license key. It is not installed on more computers than it is allowed to be on. I cannot reinstall it. They stole the $700 I paid for it. It's gone. And there's not a damn thing. Now, that you ought to go to prison for that, okay? If you want to shut the servers down because of whatever reason, you know, whatever business, fine, but then you have to release a patch that you know, just calculates whether or not the key is valid. If it does, it lets you load it.
Well, what the... So nobody in any administration is going to enforce anything like that because they're probably paying the... both parties a lot of money.
Well, yeah, so I mean, everybody, you know, but we have, I mean, you look at, you know, it's like I was talking about, I couldn't figure out how it was possible that you had this flow of parts, you know, in the tariff context for cars being made in Detroit, goes across the Ambassador Bridge, they add something to the assembly, it comes back across the Ambassador Bridge, and it goes into the, you know, the assembly plant. And I'm sitting here saying, this makes absolutely no sense. Why would not that, I mean, besides the fact that that bridge is one of the most backed up in the world, all right? I mean, you can see the line of trucks, you know, for 2 hours down the freeway ramp, right?
Well, the big trucks can't go through the tunnel, right?
That's right. They can't. Well, the trucks can't go through the tunnel because if anything happened with hazardous material or there was a wreck and it got structurally compromised, it would be, you know.
It'd be a problem.
Right. So they have to go over the bridge. But the bridge is old. It's, you know, it's a bridge. It's functional, but, you know, it is what it is.
Some guy gave me a whole bunch of heat one day.
They're supposedly building another span, by the way.
Is it the Gordie Howe Bridge?
I don't know what they're calling it, but there's apparently another span.
When I get there, there was a thing that said trucks to the right or something, and there's like three lanes. It was such a miserable, foggy, rainy day. I went to see a baseball game in Toronto. So I was coming back and I go over the thing and there's trucks, like, you know, whatever, two right lanes, and I got this, you know, pickup truck and they got all these orange cones in those lanes. So I was, hey, can't you read the sign? And I go, buddy, I was the only guy on the bridge. What are you giving me shit for, basically? But the next time I came back, I've seen two games up there. I actually went up there on a business trip. I came the northern way. It was much easier, even though it's like 10 miles further. You stay in the northern, there's two Canada highways. There's a lower one and an upper one. You stay on the upper one, and you actually come into the U.S., whatever the town is above Detroit. It's like maybe you're 10 miles further, and then you take that interstate and down. It's a lot better than going on 94.
Well, it's Blue Ridge. It's Sarnia. Yeah, there's a bridge up there too.
All right, so what are you making on these numbers today? I was listening on the way in. Everybody was very concerned about looking for the numbers since we're allegedly bringing all this imported goods in advance, and that's the reason why, according to Navarro, if you believe him, that's the reason why the GDP number was negative and it really isn't a recession and blah, blah, blah. For those that weren't listening yesterday, your GDP numbers are consumption by us,
right?
Investment by people that invest, government spending, and then the net of imports versus exports. So if you all of a sudden buy ahead
X,
on the
X minus I.
Yeah. So you
right.
So you end up with you could drive that number negative. I never did find out. I looked a couple spots. What was the deflator?
I did. I didn't check the deflator. But I saw something that it was 2.8 or 2.9 or something like that.
Okay.
So it's. I mean, it wasn't a shocking number, but it was. You know, it's well above the 2% target.
Okay, so they're at least doing that. They're not saying it's 1.5 or something.
No. There's you know, I mean, as we all know, that's ridiculously understated. But you know, it is what it is. But I did. There wasn't anything that, like, stood out to me. But the report was weak. Okay, and you know, Navarro is, well, you know, everybody's just shifting. Okay.
Well, he's the guy. He's the guy. Musk said was a blithering idiot.
Well,
Chris Musk is a little. He's out there.
You know, Musk also thinks that the birth rate is a terminal death spiral, and all humans are going to cease to exist. And the thing that gets me about stuff like this, when you have people shooting off their mouth in that kind of a way, is that you have, there's 5,000 years roughly of recorded human history, right? And by the way, Japan. For anyone that thinks that this inflationary situation is persistent, if we don't solve these problems, you've got rocks in your head. Japan went through the sort of inflationary nonsense and screw the common person game that, you know, that we've been doing. Okay, the reaction among people in Japan was to close their legs. They're not making children. And, okay, if you recall, 30, 40 years ago, housing was essentially unobtainium, a big part of why, I mean, it's just too expensive. You couldn't pay for it. Big part of why people closed their legs was, well, where am I going to raise my kids, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, guess what?
Well, kids used to be an investment good when you had a farm, not anymore.
Well, but you know, but the thing is, I mean, all right. So let's fast forward to today. Prices are anywhere from a third to a half of what they were 40 years ago in Japan for housing, and if you get outside the major cities, there are huge numbers of vacant single family homes.
Yeah, but what kind of jobs do you have out there? How do you make any money out there?
Well, but Chief, the point being. That if you think asset prices only go one direction, and
well,
and
I don't. I'm just wondering when.
Awful lot of people do, and you know what? And then Musk is, you know, oh well, this is a permanent doom loop. No, it's not a permanent doom loop. You know
well,
what?
You know what, Carl? If it depends on your time frame. I mean,
well, of course.
I mean, if you were alive, well, you were, but if you were our age. You're a little younger than me, in 1982, and you looked at the stock market, if I gave you the money, you wouldn't invest in the stock market.
Right.
Since 1967, maybe 8, might be a little foggy here, but I'm pretty close on this stuff, to August of 1982, I'm going to say the market was either unchanged or down.
Yeah.
When I started in January of 81 or December of 80, something along those lines. I think the next 18 months before the rally started, even though interest rates were already starting to come down and the signs were blinking on the wall, the market was down another 20% after rates were already coming down. Same thing this time, by the way. And rates have gone from 0 to 4%. The market's up another 20%. But you couldn't have... If you would have walked in, and I know you like to tip a glass... And even if you were having your pinky up, like I'm sure you do, if you were at some party and said, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cash in my CD and I'm going to try and find my mutual fund guy who's probably painting houses, and I'm going to put some money in the market," you first would have been cut off. If there was a stray straitjacket, it would have been put on you and you've been heaved out the front door.
By the way, plus 177.
Okay, but I don't see how. Today, if you were to say to somebody, "Boy, you've ridden this seven stock thing up all this way, maybe you should take a little off." The same horror that is on that person's face is nothing like the horror would have been in 1982. The market, what are you, some kind of moron? I'm making 14% for doing nothing, and
sitting in a bank account. Yeah.
What do you say we take like a 2 second break and we'll come back on these numbers? S&P futures up 44. All news is good news. NASDAQ futures up 142. Be right back, real quick.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. The number was what, 177? Crowd, of course, didn't we drop last month down 45? Is that still the game, the Biden-Trump game? Is that the presidential game now? You put out a big number, and then you dropped the one the month before?
Yeah, probably, but you know I pay no attention to these revisions and so-called establishment BS anyway. I go off the household numbers and the internal tables. And this actually is an interesting number. This is it's April, okay? So it's not it's a normal month. Let's put it that way. It's one that you expect to see kind of real kinds of stuff. Plus 631 in the household survey.
Yeah, I've got that on the one you tell me not to look at. I got us up
right
600,000 people in the labor force, which is how the population piece is only up 100 to 150, yet there's 600,000 people in the. Well, they got 600,000 people here in the column of.
I got two plus 205, and then we don't know what the blank they're doing.
Yeah, it's a
List as well, and then the other kind of interesting thing is that the employment population ratio there was. Among people without high school diplomas, there's quite a bit of firing. All right, that's probably the nice way to put it. Although it's a yes and no, and the reason is the civilian labor force side of that went up substantially, but the participation rate was down six ticks. So if you looked at just the gross number of people that got jobs, you'd say, oh, it doesn't look all that bad, right? But if you look at it as a percentage basis, not so good. But then because of that, because many of those people went off, and this is, this couch surfing thing is rather interesting, because if you look at the unemployed number in those with a less than high school diploma, it's down 50,000, and that meant the unemployment rate went down by five ticks to 6.1 from 6.6. Okay, now the problem is that, how does that all jive? Well, the way it jives is the not in labor force number.
Right? Well, here's what, if somebody looks at tables, they're probably going to look at the first table like I am.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we roll those four categories, they roll in May and June, okay, because that's when the graduations
According to this one, the idiot table that I'm looking at, the first one,
right?
It's exactly what you and I and the world wants. There's 400,000 more people working, and it came directly out of the, we don't know what they're doing, school, couch surfing, wherever, which caused the participation rate to go up by a tenth of a percent.
Right.
Which is exactly what you and I want to have happen. Now you're saying
employment population ratio went up by a tick, which, yeah, and that's a positive change. Yes.
Now you're saying to the other the other, the detailed stuff doesn't agree with this, or what?
Well, I'm saying that it's extremely uneven. So people who do not have a high school diploma, numerically gained, but not really. Okay, in other words, that data looks really punky, and it looks like people just said F this and walked away. Okay. On the other hand, high school graduates and people with some kind of educational background all gained ground. Okay, so you look at this and you say, well, you know, all this has to tie back when you get done, right? When it's just like, general ledger, it all has to tie back. Everything balances for every debit, there's a credit.
Does it?
Well, yes. When I look into the detail table, the answer is yes. However, remember that the people below the median, and median and below, which is not the people with bachelor's degrees, right? The data is a whole lot more lumpy there. Now, if you bring labor back into the United States. That was being done in Mexico, being done in China, whatever have you. You're going to lift that lower section, and you're not just going to lift them in terms of the people, the percentage who have jobs. You're also going to lift wages, and so that's going to bring that lower leg of that K up substantially, and that will be a very good thing. Now, is it going to be extremely disruptive to the to valuations? Yeah.
Well, last year, the numbers are bumping along, not showing any kind of real progress,
right?
According to this thing, all right. All of a sudden, we have this massive adjustment in January, which essentially, I don't want to say this, but made every show we did last year pretty much useless.
Well, but that happens every year.
Well, here's what I'm looking at.
No, it does. During Biden's entire presidency, every single January was a train wreck.
Okay, but I'm saying the numbers are so huge. Last year, if you looked at April through December, we actually had like 150,000 people hired.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then the January number pops out. There's 2,000,002. All right. So now, even if you look at this number today on this particular table, if you say, okay, how are we doing since January? I mean, if you wanted to be critical of, by one thing Carl has taught me for sure is you got to look more than a few months before you grade presidents and so forth. If you look at this since January, we're not doing squat. Now, if you look at it from the December number, and kick the 2 million in there, which had nothing to do with Biden or Trump, probably, it looks like we're kicking serious ass since December, but since January we haven't even budged. So the adjustment not only seems to have made last year's numbers kind of useless; it's almost making this year's numbers kind of useless.
Well, I don't know that I'd go quite.
I won't say you, but you know what I'm saying.
I wouldn't go that far. And the reason is this: you've got January is 162,347. Unadjusted household.
Oh, here it's 163,895. They really kicked it up.
Unadjusted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And this month is 164,043. Now that's a decent increase.
And it's got 300,000 more people unemployed, which just means they're looking for work or whatever. Who the hell knows?
It means they came off the couch because we went from 102,871 and then not in labor force to 102,574. So you had 300,000 people that came back into the workforce.
Okay, but
at the same time you added these jobs. So I mean, the population adjustment was substantial this time around. Okay, very substantial.
Yeah, 3 million people. Where'd they come from?
Yeah, where'd they come? Well, but here's the thing: last year it was actually negative.
Okay, this thing only goes back to April, so.
I got the spreadsheet up here. Last year it was neg 400,000. Okay, so they took people out of the civilian labor force. So I mean, so that exaggerated. I mean, this is again January. Every January has this. It makes for real trouble, and it's like you know, everybody has been running around with their hair on fire about the whole thing with the MTS numbers. That, you know, Trump is the, you know, is the 900-pound gorilla in the room. He's blowing money like water. Blah 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 blah. You know. And I'm like, excuse me, for all but the last couple months of the fiscal so far, he wasn't in office.
Right.
The other guy was.
Well, right? But he also, I would politically, and I know this is unpopular on both sides, I take the last 8 years, the Trump-Biden mess is probably the worst 8 years of government combined I've ever seen. Just as a quick one though, Carl. Before I say this, when you're not here, I want to make sure if we've got 180,000 people more that are unemployed. Now, I think you said. Now, go with me on this one. I think the only way now you can be counted as being unemployed is if you these guys have it should be anybody who is looking for a job. Is now in the labor right. force. But I think technically now, because maybe of laziness or whatever, they just count the amount of people that are receiving unemployment checks. And when you roll off. So, I mean, I think it's right. impossible, again, I believe it's impossible for if I've been sitting on the couch for 2 years and say, hey, I'm going to get my moldy butt back in the labor force and actually start interviewing. I'm not counted because how could they ever find me? How would they ever know?
It is part of the survey, Chief.
But I'm saying, I think
if you're unemployed, are you looking for work? They do ask the question.
Okay, but I think the laziness in there, they just count the people that are getting the checks.
For unemployed, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So if I roll off the couch and go get an interview today. Unless they call me up, there's no way they know that. So,
well, that's true. But statistical. I mean, that's what statistical sampling does. Some, you know. So I mean, you will not be counted as employed, but you will come out of that not in labor force number.
Okay, but the 300,000. I'm sorry, 80,000 more people that are in the unemployed column. Am right. I correct in saying because of the half-assed way they're doing this, that means 80,000 more people are getting unemployment checks.
Are getting checks, that's correct.
So I'm saying it's the number here is not quite the definition.
No, it isn't. And unemployed, as the BLS defines it, you know, unemployed as you define it is you don't have a job.
Yeah, yeah. And if you all of a sudden start looking, and then you're supposed to be looking. But
you're still unemployed.
Yeah, but in reality, if I'm not getting a check, I'm not counted.
Well, as unemployed, that's yes. correct. And the way the federal and state unemployment systems work, you're supposed to document that you went out and you actually attempted to get a job.
Right.
In order to get the check.
You used to have to go in the place and do that before there was online, yeah.
Oh yeah. But I mean, but you're supposed to report it, and now it's almost all online. Where'd you send a resume to? Who did you call? Blah, blah. You're supposed to list the stuff, right? I mean, now exactly how much policing they do of that, I don't know.
Well, I could have, I'm one of the honest people left in this world, I guess. Whenever we got laid off at Pullman, everyone went to the unemployment office, right?
Well, yeah.
Well, and then as soon as you said Pullman, they knew right away because there was like 1,000 people around that were laid off. And they didn't really make you come in at all. But as soon as I got my consulting job back, I told them I had a job. They would never have known. I mean, I was never hired. Yeah. They would never have known. I could have milked that another 6 months, but I didn't. And I mean, I don't know how do they check to see if you're not doing something else?
Well, you will show up on somebody's 941, and God forbid if you do.
Okay.
And because they will come after you for that if they paid you. And you were working. They find it.
I was a consultant and all I did was get a 1099, they don't know what month I was there.
No, but you could get. I mean, there are people that will get away with it, but you could get caught.
I would never get away with it. So I'm not that. But I mean, I could have milked them for a couple of months, pretty easy, probably.
Probably, and you might have gotten away with that. Okay, I mean, if you go to work for somebody where you're actually getting a check, you're not.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that. It was a consulting firm, and by the time I sent them my hours and everything, I didn't get the check for 2 months.
Right. Yeah. You wouldn't get away with that. So, the other thing that I think is kind of interesting is that we've still got this, you know, on the 12-month run rate basis compared against the non-institutional population, we still have a deeply, deeply negative number here.
Kevin says I should have told him that I interviewed at Vendelay Industries. Who's that?
I don't know.
Must be some Vendelay, fake industry or something. Everybody,
it's got to be something. Yeah, there's a double entendre in there somewhere. I just it went over my head.
So, in terms of the market, am I right in thinking? You know, we're trying to play catch up on some calls we wrote on one of the places. The rest of the places were fine, but am I right that now, since the Trump and Powell seem to have made some peace, and Powell's pumping money back in the system just like he did in Trump's first time in here? That all is, we're right back to market going up all the time and valuations going to the moon. What do you make of Microsoft's valuation? I mean,
I'll tell you, I still have a very serious issue, you know, valuation wise in general. Okay, historically speaking, these kinds of periods of time on a forward basis are not good things, right? They just aren't. And I've still got an asset allocation problem with the idea of being in a market that is this richly valued, when I can, you know, when today anyway, I have the option of, you know, grabbing 4.25 in short term treasuries, and I have no market risk on that, so I don't have any principal risk. Now, of course, you know, there are plenty of people who think that, you know, going back to a 1% or 2% world on the short end of the curve, I think that's absolute lunacy and it's not going to happen. Of course, if it does, and you know, you're in short-term stuff, you're not locked up, okay? I mean, you know, you can always put it back in the market. The risk, of course, is, you know, okay, yeah, you're gonna put back in the market 30% higher than it is now. But I look at the companies that are out there that have reported and are reporting, and the what you're paying for earnings, especially among those companies that pay no dividend, right? So there's no capital return to you over time. It's all price appreciation. The imbalance is at historically ridiculous levels, and the chart is parabolic. Can it continue for some period? Well, of course it can. I mean, you know, who knows when it all ends. But on a, you look for the next, you know, 2-3 months, I don't know, all right? I mean, the trade dislocate, how much of this is real? How much of this is theater? Okay, how much actual, you know, we're not going to be slavers, basically. How much of that is real?
Well, how much... There's such glee with this every day. No matter how bad the report is, all you got to do is lob out there from China or from here. Oh, it looks like we're talking and we're up another 2%. I mean, this is...
I know, and it's crazy because the thing is, I mean, you know, you look at the... the squeeze is not relenting on, you know, if you're in the top 1% of income earners, you don't care. But the thing is, you know, you look at this, and it's like I pointed out a couple of weeks, or I don't know, maybe it was like 3-4 weeks ago. I said, yeah, you got this guy. He's, you know, he's 63. He's got a couple more years. He's going to retire, and he had a $500,000 portfolio. Now all of a sudden it's $2 million, right? And he took his couple $100,000 house, and he dumped it and bought a $700,000 house with a mortgage with a 30-year note on it, and he's 63 years old.
Yes.
All right. And oh, by the way, he also bought a 3 times higher property tax bill, right? Because it's 3 times as expensive a house.
Yep.
And incidentally, the entire reason he did this is because he's rich, because on paper he's got a $2 million portfolio, but it's not $2 million in cash. If that apple cart gets upset, the multiplier works both directions. It works on the downward side just like it does on the upward side, right? How many of those people then look at that and say, well, I thought I could pull 150 grand a year out of this thing with this kind of a, you know, of a market pricing thing, and, you know, and everything's wonderful and lovely and I can sit and play golf all day long. Now all of a sudden, that isn't true anymore. Oh, by the way, the maximum he can take out of there without ending up out of money in 10 years, and he thinks he's going to live longer than that, is about 60 or 70. And incidentally, his fixed expenses are 35. Like for his house.
All right, so we've got, just in terms of you and I squawking away on Stacks and Jacks, and we have this predilection, maybe because we read some in history of, you know, Weimar, Argentina, places like that. If you're 40 some years old and your pops gave you money or stock when you were 25 and you've ridden this, we've had since 2000, I'm just looking at, trying to put some numbers together here, Carl. 2000 median income, 32,000 roughly. Now it's 44.
Right.
Median new home in 2000, 163. Median new home, now 414.
Yeah, that's quite a difference.
But I'm saying, but now we have the market in 2000, 2001, say, was, this is the S&P, let's say it was 130, and now it's 563.
Yeah.
So in the money supply, I have to believe, is way more than the difference in GDP between
it
that
is.
And now. I mean, not even close. If I'm one of these holders of wealth, other than having a couple of schmucks like you and me nipping around your ankles so you got to wear tight boots so we don't get a tooth in, why would anybody pay any attention to this? Why would anybody think this is ever going to go off scale? Because every time somebody's predicted it for 25 years, they just poured more money in and salved it over. Why would any of these guys believe us?
Well, Chief, how about because that worked right up until it didn't in Japan? Okay.
Okay. I mean, I'm on your side here. You know, you
well,
know
I'm
that.
Saying, well,
but I mean,
but
so
I'm
why
saying,
would anybody? Why would you and I go on TV instead of on Stocks and Jacks, where you got some smoking hot lady interviewing us? Hey, guys, it hasn't happened yet. How this cliff is it really there? You guys have been talking about for 10 years.
Well, okay. If you know what, trees. If you look around you, and you look out the window, and you plant a little seed in the ground, that's, you know, an acorn, right? And the first few years, you look at that, and every year that tree keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? And it looks like it's never going to stop, but it does.
I guess I'm with you. I'm just wondering, going back to the party in 1982, trying to get some guy to put some money in the stock, they didn't want to listen to you. I mean, today, hey, Carl, you're making 4%, 4.5%, and by the way, some of my clients are too, in treasuries. I just made a percent today. You do what you're doing, I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, and what happened to you know, just a few weeks ago? How much did you lose in one day?
That just proved you got to buy more on the dip, and it proves the sellers are morons.
Okay.
Have at it. You know, I'm with you. I'm just saying, but
I'm saying, you know, have at it. All. Look, here's, you want something that could very easily, you know, blow up in everybody's face. You know, we are the world. We are everything. NVIDIA is all that there is because of artificial intelligence. Well, it's very artificial, but it's not very intelligent. By the way, you know, Huawei. Just very quietly dropped the fact that they apparently have a Blackwell, I think is the current NVIDIA AI beast. Theoretically, we're not supposed, you know, none of that stuff's supposed to be sold into China, of course.
You know it is.
By the way, that's illegal. And the people.
Hey, I sent it to Vietnam. I don't know how it made to China.
Yeah, well, people, you know, no one goes to jail, right? No one goes to jail. It never happens these days. This is why we have the, you know, all this stuff going on. Okay, well, guess what? What do you think Huawei did? They reverse engineered it and figured out how to make something that was equally better. By the way, remember when in Trump's first administration, when he attempted to blackball them and everybody in Congress went bananas about it being their switching equipment within the United States being blackballed from the telephone carriers? And people went nuts because, you're Zingoistic, blah, 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 xenophobe, and blah, 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 blah. Well, as it turns out, guess what has happened several times in the last few years. The Defense Department put out a bulletin about this, their own people. They do not send anything sensitive over SMS, over text messages. And the reason is that the carriers have backdoors in their firmware and all that stuff's ending up over at the PLA in China.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Well, how'd it get in there? Okay, well, because they're still running Huawei stuff because we didn't, actually enforce
well,
it.
Well, I mean, the market is what I used to see, and again, not every time, Carl, is if the market, if you went to the University of Chicago like I did, the market was God. If somebody heard the CEO groaning in the can when he walked out, the stock would be down 2%. Literally, people thought the flow of information in the market, it absolutely was, the market was a guy.
And the truth is, all he did was eat some bad Mexican last night.
Yeah. But I'm saying, that's how sacred people were on this.
I know.
And you used to see it sort of happen where, say, Microsoft earnings. All of a sudden, the few weeks before, they had analyst meetings and all this stuff, stock could creep up. Maybe it'd go up 7-8%, and all of a sudden earnings would come out, and sure enough, the earnings were 8% more than last year and maybe 2% more than anticipated, and all of a sudden you have this great news and the stock would not go anywhere because it was all sort of, I won't say leaked, anticipated. Inquiring minds need to know. It was the market always anticipates everything. Well, now the stock goes up 10%. The earnings come in 10% more, and it goes up another 10%. And you're like,
yeah, which makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. At some point, now we're saying that the next quarter is going to be up another 10%. I mean, where does this all end? Or you know what, Carl? It could be that these guys, and I won't say just with this administration, have paid these people off to such an extent they're never going to have, other than Europe or some other place, they're never going to have any check on antitrust. They're always going to be able to borrow for 4 points higher than lower than anybody else. And guess what? They might actually own the world this time. They could be the ITT that actually made it. Or the Ling Temco Vought or the Litton Industries that actually didn't go down. That one of these days, like you said, you've got Adobe, you've got Microsoft. All of a sudden they're charging people for stuff they didn't used to. What's your defense to that? If you try to make a claim, who the hell you make the claim to? Do people fired?
Well, Chief, this is part of the problem that we've had within the United States in general, and it's also in the social area of things. Infamously, Barack Obama, when he did the thing with the Dreamers, he said on the lawn of the White House as he was signing the EO that he knew it was illegal. He didn't care. He did it knowing it was illegal. And the reason he did it is because he also knew that, I just created 3 million people who are going to claim due process rights, and it would take 20 years to hear all those cases because there's only 1,800 federal judges in the country, And every single one of those people is going to take the case. They're going to sue if you try to screw them later on, 5 years down the road or whatever, when I'm not in office anymore. They're going to sue. They're going to claim due process rights. It's a clock thing. Okay, it'd take 20 years to hear all those.
But
here's the thing. The same thing happens in industry. Okay, the same thing happened with Biden with the illegals. He let 10 million people into the country. And now you have judges saying every one of those people is entitled to full due process rights. Well, wait a minute. What was done originally was ridiculously illegal, and you couldn't sue to stop it because you didn't have standing.
Well, but you
in order Right, in order to get standing, you have to have individualized injury,
I know
which, of course, you don't.
I know this one is near and dear to your heart. And I don't like what they did either, Carl. But in terms of this has been going on, and again, it's no excuse. I think the entire antitrust mess that we're in can be put back to one man, and that man is Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that.
And he basically, now he wasn't as, you know, bombastic as Obama, and certainly this guy, where he came out and lobbed out some executive order that.
But he still did it.
But he just told the Justice Department, don't prosecute any of these people.
Right.
So it gets. I mean, he didn't. You know why Obama just didn't tell people we're not going to pursue people in the inner cities. We're just going to cut back on that part of law enforcement and just do it like Dutch. Why he had to be bombastic about it and give you a line for the next 30 years. And why this guy goes in there and does nothing. All he loves the camera and I'm signing all this crap like he's a dictator. You know, so but Reagan was more effective. Just don't ever prosecute any of this stuff. Well, once people got the hand of that, I mean, and has there been a big prosecution here since, other than maybe one or two times?
No.
It's the same as.
But here's the other thing too, Chief. Remember, you know, you just had Google was found to have an illegal monopoly in search
in Europe.
Here.
Why is Google piss people off? They somehow.
They
go after those guys a little bit.
Okay,
but Google. We got a dash here. We'll talk about it on Tuesday because you know more about this than me. Google has changed dramatically, and even the years that I've been using it. I'm a Luddite on this. When did they go from? And I actually thought it was pretty damn fair, actually, Carl. When I used to Google stuff, I'm going to say 15 years ago, and you Googled screwdriver, okay, right. Or something stupid like that, on the right side of the page. There'd be Ace Hardware, True Value, and 10 different places you could go buy a screwdriver, which was obvious even to me that was paid ads for screwdrivers. Then right. On the left side of the page, it was definition of screwdriver. They kept it separate, and now there's only one page, and it's all the sponsored stuff. When did that change, or did they just?
It's because they got effectively monopoly control over search, and so as a result, it's not search anymore. Now it's all paid, and by the way, it's also viewpoint discriminated. They threatened to throw me off AdSense because of some of the stuff I wrote during the pandemic.
Is there any other search engine
left? Which is why there's now two split areas on my blog when it doesn't. Their robot can't get into the other one.
There used to be like five different searches, and
well, there are, but they all do the same thing now.
Yeah, but doesn't like is it DuckDuckGo uses the Google search engine and then just erases the stuff? Is there actually another search engine?
Yeah, there's several. Yeah, Microsoft has one. Meta actually.
Oh, your favorite dictator is now revoking on his own Harvard's tax exempt status.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Can't somebody give this guy a pill?
Well, you
why does
know
he
what?
Have to fight there's, every battle? I was talking to. Was
well,
I,
so
I
Harvard. So the 501c rules are actually quite strict, and I would argue that essentially all of the universities and colleges have been violating them for 20 years.
Well, especially the ones with the professional football teams.
Well, yeah, they've all been violating them in spades. So, the dictator in chief, you know, Orange Cheeto, as my daughter tends to call him, Orange Cheeto has decided that, you know, well, we're going to go after this one guy. And this is the problem with not enforcing laws on an even basis, is that all of a sudden you get targeted, you get screwed. And by the way, the law says you should be screwed, but the four guys over here keep doing it. Okay.
Well, yeah, it really comes down to, when you start having prosecution that's aimed only for political reasons. And it happened to him, so I mean, I understand why he's...
Well, yeah, hello.
Yeah, but...
How about Leticia, even though, up there in New York, that, you know, she herself is lying on mortgage applications and says that, well, you know, that's what she prosecuted him for doing, was allegedly misrepresenting the value of his property.
Well, as you know, even though I couldn't stand the guy long before he ran for president, and I don't think he's changed this one spot, as my mother used to say, a leopard can't change his spots. I don't think that any of that stuff was legit. I think actually some of it might have been correct. If they would, the stuff about, you know, the hush money and the lawyers going to, they probably could have found something. When I say you shouldn't be looking for something for people, but there probably was some ammo there that if he just picked out one thing that he actually did and everybody else didn't want to get themselves on paper and tried him for one thing and convicted him, I think people might have gone along with that. But that,
well,
that,
the hush money thing, the only place where that is potentially an issue is if you wrote it off as a business expense.
Okay, well, what did the two lawyers go to jail for? What, it doesn't really matter.
Well, but I'm saying, that's the thing is, I mean, that's where the where there actually is a legal violation. All right, you could. Yeah. There's nothing illegal about paying somebody to shut up. There is something illegal about trying to deduct it against your business taxes.
Well, my big bitch against my former party, the Democrats. How stupid are you? Let the guy go away. Don't keep him in the press. What's the matter with you?
Well, you know,
I mean how dumb is that?
If you don't want the guy, just let him go away. We live in a world where people seek power and then they seek to use it because, by God, I hate this son of a bitch and I'm going to get him.
Well, but still.
I'm just saying.
The last thing you want to do is give your enemy nothing but publicity because then you make a murderer
out of him. Well, but, hello.
But
yeah.
I'm just a schlump doing the show and managing money. These guys are supposed to be geniuses. How do I know this? And they don't.
Oh, they're not. Come on, they're not. Look at all the people that are screaming about this real ID thing that was, you know, has been on the books for the last 15 years, and now all of a sudden.
Yeah, but still, why is it on the books?
Well, you know what? Here's the point. You have states that were, you know, absolutely vehemently opposed to it. Okay, fine. Who went after the entire TSA situation in the first place originally? I've been on it since it was really reformed because I actually call them the sexual assault, which I'm sure gets me extra special attention if I ever go through one of their lines. But you know what? Hey, listen, I wouldn't even object to it as long as I get to have a girl do it.
God. Well,
well, I mean, come on.
I could tell a story, but I won't. It's a family show. Never mind. Maybe Tuesday if I think better. Hey, we have a nice SP Futures up 67. NASDAQ Futures up 233. There isn't a seller in the house. I guess we'll chase some calls today in one of our stuff. The rest of them were fine.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But what this is when I say it's crazy, Carl. This kind of movement, even to the upside, is not a sign of a healthy market, in my opinion.
No, I think it's what it is. Is now you've got the people everyone has to chase, right? And the, I mean, you know, I look at the credit quality deterioration and what I'm seeing in, you know, in some of those indicators internally within the consumer, and what I see is deep trouble.
Well, and, you know, if you're enough of a trader to know that if people are trading on inside information, it's not just you're making money, you're moving the market, because people who make a market that are just looking to do either side, if you jam them into a short position, you're already gone, and those people are all chasing, and maybe that's why we're up. And I'm not saying this front running could easily have come from China. They could have lobbed the memo out there. It looks like we're going to talk to the United States. How much is that worth? What's it worth?
Absolutely.
I'll take 70 Sputiks and easy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
See you Tuesday, buddy. Have a nice weekend. SP Futures up 69. NASDAQ Futures up 240. Actually, we have a pretty big rise in interest rates here today, though, which kind of is different. We're almost 4.8 in the 30-year. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.